From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Leading into tomorrow's election day in California, some individual races are making national news, as is the overall projected tally of Democrats and Republicans who will then compete for California's top two spots and the winner in November. Let's start there with the political junkie Ken Rudin. He joins us each week from all the way across the country near Washington, D.C. Hello, Ken.
Good morning, Beth, all the way across the country.
That's right. We're going to talk about elections in just a moment, but we do have a Supreme Court ruling that is making news, and it was just a decision handed down within the last few minutes. So let's start there, Ken. Do you want to do a quick summary and talk a bit about the impact?
Well, it's my own. I mean, I just saw it just moments ago, but basically the Supreme Court ruled 7-2 in favor of the Colorado baker that refused to make a cake for a gay couple, saying that the law infringed on his religious rights. Now, the fact that the vote was 7-2 makes you think that while the court basically is a very conservative court, and the fact that Stephen Breyer and Elena Kagan, two liberals, also voted with the majority. It's my understanding, though, that what the court did, it was really a narrow view of how the Colorado law seemed to ignore or disrespect or whatever the baker's religious rights. And he closed on Sundays and he refused to make cakes with any alcohol or any kind of theme that didn't go along with his views. So I don't know if this is really a big defeat for the LGBTQ community or not. It seems like it's restricted. It's really a narrowly defined case that the Colorado law did not protect this man's religious views. So
I'll refer everyone to continuing analysis that we'll have throughout the day on NPR. Let's jump back to elections. And since we were talking about you being all the way across the country, give me your view of how California's election day looks from there.
It is big. It's big news, and I think that it's certainly big news for the Democratic Party. If the Democratic Party hopes to win control of the House in November, and many people think that they have a good chance, they only need a net gain of 23 seats to do so, they're going to have to make their star tomorrow in California. And I say tomorrow in California because California has this very strange or interesting, depending on your point of view, election law where all the candidates run on the same ballot, regardless of party, and then the top two finishers move on to the general election. Now, the problem for the Democrats is that because there's so much Democratic enthusiasm out there, so much energy on the Democratic side, that on several districts, many districts, there are, for example, in the 48th district where Dana Rohrabacher, the Republican, is seeking re-election, there are so many Democratic candidates running in that the Democratic vote could be split in such a way that the top two in the primaries could be two Republicans, Rohrabacher and another Republican. So while the Democrats have tremendous opportunity, there are seven districts, at least seven seats in California held by Republicans that Hillary Clinton took the district in 2016, which theoretically gives the Democrats good shots of winning in November, but not if they get shut out in tomorrow's primaries by crowding each other out and splitting the Democratic vote and allowing Republicans to finish in the top two.
You've heard the phrase jungle primary, right?
Jungle primary is one way of doing it. Other states have it. For example, in Mississippi's special Senate election this year, the one where Thad Cochran has resigned from, that will be a jungle primary. In San Francisco mayor's race, which is also tomorrow, is a jungle primary where everybody runs in on the same ballot. But basically, the clean version of it is the top two finishers. And again, it's something that once upon a time, a lot of people thought could have helped Democrats. It certainly will be in the Senate race, where Dianne Feinstein and Kevin DeLeon are the likely top two finishers for Feinstein's Senate seat to go on to November. But it could hurt the Democrats in the House seats, in those crucial House seats for November.
So this top two situation is creating such a wild card opportunity that it was interesting to hear some of the national coverage of it. And I'm going to play 38 seconds of Chuck Todd on NBC's Meet the Press talking about this, not so much because of exactly how he's explaining it, but the fact that It is complicated. It's wonky, and people around the country are discussing it. So here's Chuck Todd, and the setup to this is him saying that Democrats might not get what they might consider a Hollywood ending because of the top two primary situation.
Democrats have flooded the races in those 14 remaining GOP seats. There are 56 Democrats running in the primaries across those 14 races, compared to just 38 Republicans. That means Democrats run the risk of splitting their vote so that none of their candidates actually finish first or second. It's also become the Twilight Zone, where Democratic groups find themselves propping up gadfly Republicans while attacking members of their own party, all in the hopes that Republicans somehow split their vote more and Democrats unite behind one or two candidates. Talk about your crazy game theories.
And that's definitely true in at least three districts. It's not all around the country.
Right,
but
right.
As I said, there are seven Republican seats that where Hillary Clinton won that Democrats would love to win. And in three of those districts, in the 39th, where Ed Royce is retiring, in the 48th, where Dana Rohrabacher is seeking re-election, and the 49th, where Daryl Issa is retiring, all in Southern California, there is such a plethora of Democratic candidates that they could theoretically get shut out in November. And yet what's interesting, in the governor's race, where Gavin Newsom, by all accounts, he will finish first in tomorrow's primary, he is hoping that the second place finisher is not Antonio Villaraigosa,
right,
the former Los Angeles mayor, because Gavin Newsom doesn't want to run against a fellow Democrat in November. He, Gavin Newsom, wants John Cox, the Republican who's been endorsed by Donald Trump. He wants Cox to be the guy who he runs against in November. So you know, it'll be an easy campaign for Gavin Newsom versus John Cox, a party that is not going to do well statewide. But if John Cox makes it into the top two for governor, then having a Republican on the ticket in November theoretically could help Republican House candidates do better than expected in November. So there's a lot of Machiavellian things going on in here where some Democrats are eating their own. Some Democrats are trying to help John Cox so it'll help Gavin Newsom. But of course, Villaraigosa wants to finish second. So,
but that's
not what Gavin Newsom wants, because the last thing Newsom wants is to have two Democrats battling in and out in November that could theoretically hurt Gavin Newsom's chances, given all the votes that are in vote-rich Southern California.
And because Chuck Todd said the number 14, just for perspective, there are 53 House seats in California. Republicans hold 14 of them right now. So,
right, but there are seven districts that everybody is looking at in November. They're all seven, won by Hillary Clinton, all, you know, where demographics are changing, and all, if the Democratic enthusiasm is as strong as so many people say it is, then the Republicans should worry about their chances in November. But of course, Democrats have to make it onto the ballot, come out of the ballot on Tuesday's primaries to have a shot of winning in November.
And Gavin Newsom isn't the only Democrat hoping for a Republican opponent. That's being played out on some legislative level and even local level races, too. As for individual races, have you been following the story, or at least the coverage of Congressional District 4? It's going to show up in an NPR story that'll be broadcast this afternoon, and it did over the weekend in a New York Times story.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, this is the one that's held by Republican Tom McClintock.
Right.
It's a solid Republican district. McClintock won with 63% of the vote last time out. He's not thought to be endangered, although who knows, if there's a big Democratic wave, then that could happen. Trump won as convincingly. Mitt Romney won the district convincingly. But what's interesting about this one is that there are some Democratic activists, or at least one activist in particular, who was trying to use Facebook, similar to the way the Russians used Facebook to help, ostensibly help Donald Trump in 2016. And there's a liberal group. There are two leading Democratic candidates. One is a woman by the name of Jessica Morse, who's backed by this interesting guy on Facebook and trying to, and basically make it a case where she is the true Democratic candidate. She has been endorsed by the state party, but there's another woman running, Regina Battison, who is an MIT professor, who is also progressive and liberal, and is basically crying foul, saying there's dirty tricks. If the Russians played dirty tricks in 2016, well, this liberal guy, this liberal progressive guy, is playing dirty tricks in 2018. And so, you know, you always talk about splits in the Republican Party. Well, there were splits in the Democratic Party as well, and we're seeing it in the 4th District.
There's another Democrat in that race, Rosa Calderon. And then on the very last day of filing, one more Democrat jumped in, Robert Lawton. And besides Tom McClintock, there's another Republican, Mitchell White. So it's a complicated, I think messy is a word that's being used often with this race. And there's been a 5-part series here locally, as well as the national coverage of this race. So there again, the interesting question is who will finish number 2 and go on to November. But that story is playing out across the state, Ken.
It is. And, you know, I mean, you say the word messy, and that's probably a good word, but democracy can be messy at times. And of course, the alternative to democracy is something I don't even want to think about. So it may not work to everything, to all the political science professors and students who feel that politics should be neat and orderly. It's not, and it's certainly not orderly and neat in the 4th District.
You're listening to Ken Rudin, the political junkie. Let's go to international politics. And the summit with North Korea's leader is now confirmed. There was news this morning that some of the military leaders in North Korea have been ousted, but President Trump is moving forward with his plans next Tuesday in Singapore. Although I think it's fair to say it doesn't happen till it happens, right?
Well, you know, that's true about anything with Donald Trump, and certainly as somebody as mercurial as Kim Jong-un. But I agree with you, Beth. It looks like it's happening on the 12th in Singapore. And you know, I mean, the fact that it was so unpredictable of Trump to cancel it to begin with, and then as soon as he canceled it, he said, but we're going to make it happen again. So I'm not sure what we gained or learned by this brief cancellation by the president, but the fact that it is happening, and hey, look, President Bush, President Obama, President Clinton all tried to get a deal or work something out with the North Korean leader, and of course, they all failed. It makes no sense to try to predict what could happen, except for the fact that as of right now, on June 4th, it looks like the meeting is happening, and any prediction beyond that would be a foolish exercise.
Weekend news shows might have been full of discussion and anticipation of the summit, but what ended up being the topic is whether President Trump would or should agree to be questioned by Special Counsel Robert Mueller, and then the question of whether the president could or would pardon himself. So just to give you a little flavor of that, here is one more clip. This is from ABC This Week, and the president's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, is being interviewed by George Stephanopoulos. You'll hear George's voice first.
Do you and the president's attorneys believe the president has the power to pardon himself?
He's not, but he probably does. I mean, he has no intention of pardoning himself, but he probably does. It doesn't say he can't.
Did you get that? He's not, but he probably does.
Well, you know something, Giuliani said the same similar thing on Meet the Press with our good friend Chuck Todd. But basically, the White House argument is that he has the absolute right. Well, actually, Trump himself tweeted today that I have the absolute right to pardon himself. Not that I will, because I'm not guilty of anything, but just in case I can. And it just really, you just wonder, you know, given, well, we could talk about the other issue as well as the pardons that, at least the Dinesh D'Souza pardon that the president gave last week. But more importantly, the fact that the White House feels he can pardon himself makes the argument feel that there's no such thing as obstruction of justice if it's the president who commits it, because since he has control of the federal government, he can't be obstructing justice. So that's a very strange argument. It didn't work for President Nixon, certainly, and during the Watergate thing. And of course, Bill Clinton was impeached as well, not convicted, but he was impeached. But the argument basically is that, you know, he has the right to terminate any Department of Justice or FBI investigation. He has the control of everything. It's kind of scary. And I kind of think that, I mean, I'm watching Giuliani say this. He feels with complete certainty that, I mean, the obvious question is whether the president is above the law. And the Giuliani argument is, well, the president is the law. And, you know, that has not been tested in the courts yet, but that would be a very interesting court case. As Giuliani says, even if the president does decide to pardon himself, the courts will be very busy for at least a year or two sorting that out.
I am being told also that New York State crimes cannot be pardoned by the president. So there will be a lot of discussion about this. And we're hearing a couple words come up often in these conversations, which is unprecedented by the president or unusual by the president. So there's a whole category of that right now.
Yes. As a matter of fact, you know, it's funny when Eric Schneiderman, the New York State Attorney General, had to resign because of some sex scandal he was involved in. The first thing that many anti-Trump people around the country said, oh, no, how does that affect the investigation into the Trump business activities? Because you're absolutely right that you cannot pardon. You're not going to get a pardon if it's a state, if the state is doing the investigation into the crime. But there are a lot of different investigations from different sources, and you know, unprecedented is the right word. Unusual is certainly a right word.
But
we'll just see what happens. But the fact that Giuliani in the White House seems so sure of himself and saying that there's no reason why the president needs to testify before Robert Mueller, again, you know, I mean, I think ultimately the answer is going to be on November 5th, and whether voters whether it's a referendum on President Trump or not, regardless of what Robert Mueller decides.
All right. Well, in California, the first step to November happens tomorrow. So we'll check in with you again next week and see where the number ones and the number twos are.
That's true. And also next week is the Nevada primary. We'll talk about that as well.
That's right. Thanks a lot, Ken. Have a great week.
Thank you, Beth.
That is Ken Rudin, the political junkie. Tomorrow being election day, you can cast your ballot at a vote center. You can even do that today. You can drop it off today. You can mail it tomorrow. Insight is live as usual in the morning, and then we're going to be back on the air live at 7 p.m. with some updates throughout the evening. The CAP Radio news staff is here, and even if you're watching results on TV, we ask you to make CAP Radio your second screen, as we say, on whatever device you choose. And you can do that very easily by just going to capradio.org. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Capital Public Radio.